Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp.
Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my very special guest is Dr. Gene Greenblatt, and he is co-author, along with Bill Gottlieb, of the book Finally Focused, The Breakthrough Natural Treatment Plan for ADHD that restores attention, minimizes hyperactivity, and helps eliminate drug side effects. Finally Focused provides a proven natural and medical methods to easily treat problems such as nutritional deficiencies or excesses, diabosis, sleeping difficulties, and food allergies, all of which surprisingly can cause or worsen the symptoms of ADHD. Using Dr. Greenblatt's effective plus-minus healing plan, parents will first understand the reasons behind their child's symptoms and then be able to eliminate them by addressing the child's unique pattern of biological weakness. Adults with ADHD can do the same for themselves. And if the conventional medication is still necessary, this integrative approach will minimize or even eliminate troublesome side effects. For more information, you can visit Dr. Greenblatt's website, which is www.jamesgreenblattmd.com, but you can also visit the website finallyfocusedbook.com to find out more about the book. So with that, I'd like to welcome Dr. Greenblatt.
Thank you, Rob. It's good to be part of the show.
Thank you very much. This is one topic that I never tire of talking about because it affects so many people and parents and their children out there that, you know, anytime we can get some good information, I'm really happy to pass it on. So, first of all, let's start with you have been working with ADHD with your patients for decades, and the whole diagnosis really has changed through the years, hasn't it?
Yes, we're approaching 30 years of clinical practice, so it's been a big part of my career as a child psychiatrist. And I think it's really important that your listeners know that the information that we've kind of gathered, the scientific information, has really evolved over these 30 years. And we now have very effective treatment models and an effective kind of biological understanding of what might be going on.
Yeah. So I guess we should probably start with one of the things I noticed when I was going through and reading in your book is that you indicate that ADHD is not a disease, but it's more a syndrome or a disorder. So can you explain the nuance between those?
Sure. I think, you know, the symptoms of, attention problems or poor impulse control, activity, number one, they could be caused by many different things. So it's important to do an assessment. And the focus of our work is that there might be different causes for those symptoms, and that's why we use the word kind of syndrome. So it's not like everyone with ADHD, it's caused by, you know, a deficiency in vitamin X. For some individuals, it could be, you know, a food allergy, other individuals a nutritional deficiency, other individuals it could be an environmental factor. So we're looking, the goals of treatment is for looking for some of those underlying causes. Sometimes it's simple, sometimes there are many. But it's really important that we kind of help assess what might be contributing and it's different for different people. That's why we kind of use the word syndrome.
Yeah. So I just out of curiosity, since you've been working with this for decades, is there an increase? I mean, there's a lot of talk that it's, you know, really the syndrome or the disorder is really been on the increase. That I guess 11% of children are affected by it. Is that, have you seen that there's been an increase, or is it maybe better diagnoses you know, what's going on?
Well, it's probably a combination. It's clearly been, the increases clear have been in the use of medications. And for some communities, lower socioeconomic communities, the numbers are really staggering, you know, 10-20%. Other communities, it might be 4-7% of kids. So the overall increase in prescribing medications for this disorder has increased, and most experts believe that the incidence has also increased, whether it's because of better diagnosis and people are looking more carefully. Over diagnosis is still somewhat controversial.
Yeah. Speaking of controversial, the whole vaccine, or, you know, vaccination, the autism or maybe ADHD connection. What's your view of that?
Well, I think there hasn't, of all the kind of environmental toxins we worry about with ADHD, like some of the food additives and pesticides, there hasn't been a lot of good research with the vaccines in ADHD. I think there's been more material looking at autism than ADHD.
Okay. So now, I want to take a few minutes and kind of dive into the, you basically in the book you list kind of four potential causes or contributing factors that may lead to the symptoms of ADHD. So I'd like to, if you wouldn't mind, talk a little bit about each of them. Now, there were genetic, neurological, environmental, and nutritional. So let's start with genetic. That's obviously, there's nothing you can do about, I mean, if you're predisposed genetically, right?
Well, the genetics kind of is that vulnerability, and I do think there's a lot one can do. I think the genetic part is important to understand, one, because it's a kind of biochemical brain-based, you know, tendency to have attention span and maybe be impulsive. Two, it helps parents kind of look at themselves to see if some of their behaviors might be related to ADHD that was not diagnosed. But like any kind of genetic disorder now that we're talking about, or at least in mental health, it's just a liability. It's not this absolute symptom list where function is impaired. And that's really important. Mm-hmm. So there is a genetic vulnerability, but it doesn't mean someone is impaired academically or professionally by any means.
Yeah. And okay, so now neurological, I've kind of been reading about neuroplasticity, you know, the ability to kind of rewire the neurons. So how does the neurological aspect fit into it?
Well, I think what's important to understand is that part of the genetics might be or could be certain receptors in the brain and neurochemical pathways in the brain that work a little differently with kids and adults with ADHD. So they might have less, one specific example, dopamine receptors, which means paying attention and focusing for long periods of time is harder. So there does appear to be clear differences both anatomically in the brain as well as kind of neurochemically how the brain works. And research has increasingly demonstrated these changes.
Okay. And then, you know, you mentioned about the environmental and the toxins And then nutritional. Nutritional seems to play a big part in your treatment plan. So is this an area, it seems that this is an area where parents can be very active in assisting, you know, their child working with the symptoms of ADHD?
Yes, absolutely. I think that part of the reason we focused on it, because it's often ignored, and the research now is quite clear. So even though a lot of this was around 30 years ago, we now have the scientific research to be able to demonstrate many of these deficiencies. So the deficiency in zinc and magnesium are very common, and oftentimes as parents understand and doctors look at this, we can make huge inroads, whether the kids are taking medicines or not.
Yeah, yeah. Now, let's talk a bit about your plus-minus treatment plan. I mean, because that's kind of the crux of the book. And so, anyway, if you wouldn't mind, you know, just explain to the listeners exactly what that treatment plan is.
Sure. It was just a model that we came up with to help kind of parents and professionals understand this concept that we're describing, a syndrome, and how do we best treat it. And the plus minus plan just kind of looks at what things are important to add, either adding to the diet, and that could be everything from magnesium to positive feedback, to being in nature and exercise. So it's a complete kind of psychosocial and medical things that we need to add. And then the minuses kind of outline those things in the environment, like the pesticides, like elevations of copper that we see in the water, and lead, and intestinal imbalances, all things that we need to decrease or minimize for effective treatment for ADHD. So the plus minus
yeah.
plan just kind of outlines those different things.
So I want to, you mentioned magnesium a couple of times, and I've read about, I mean, it seems to be a mineral that really, I mean, a lot of people call it the miracle mineral. And then I think in your book you even have it as that. Is this something that, I mean, should most people be looking at, you know, their magnesium level? I mean, what does this mineral do for us? And are many of us deficient in it?
Well, again, practicing for 30 years looking at nutritional deficiencies, I would say that magnesium is by far the most common deficiency. We put it in the first chapter in this book as being the most important because the research has also demonstrated the vast majority of ADHD kids are deficient in magnesium. I actually believe our ADHD kids are so deficient, I speculate there's a genetic differences in either needs for magnesium for these kids. Why it's so important is it's involved in hundreds of enzymes in the brain and throughout the body. And the simplest mechanism I can share with you is that as your stress level goes up, you actually deplete magnesium. So we lose magnesium
oh, wow.
when we're under stress. And I think the reason I believe it's being commonly deficient is that we're kind of depleting it from our soil. And as we don't add, when we fertilize our crops, we don't add magnesium. So there are studies that the levels of magnesium in the foods that we're eating are much, much less than they were many years ago. So there are many ways that our kind of culture is getting more and more deficient in magnesium, and there are pretty significant implications for both physical problems like insomnia, fatigue, even constipation, and psychiatric problems like anxiety and ADHD.
Wow. You know, I mean, with the stress levels of people just, I mean, kind of going through the roof lately, I mean, it just seems that that's an area we really need to pay attention to. I mean, stress is just everywhere.
Absolutely, and particularly some of these kids with ADHD that are struggling in school, struggling socially. There's a level of chronic stress, and then the homework and everything else that really kind of, I believe, takes a genetically vulnerable kid and causes more magnesium deficiency.
Yeah. One of the areas you also talk about in the book is balancing brain waves. You know, and it seems that, you know, for the children with ADHD, that, you know, that kind of imbalance seems to kind of be prominent. So, I mean, what are some things that one can do to, I guess, first of all, I mean, how do our brain waves, you know, what is balanced, you know, as far as brain waves, and then, you know, what is it that maybe we can do to, you know, correct an imbalance?
Sure, that there are, you know, many different types of brain waves, but for ADHD, the two that we think about is one called theta waves, which are those big brain waves, those that are more prominent when we're daydreaming and not paying attention. Beta waves are those very short brain waves that if we're focusing and paying attention that we produce more beta waves. And this just kind of is the electrical kind of current in the brain. And the research has been shown quite clear that those with ADHD have much higher theta waves, much higher those daydreaming brain waves. So our goal is decreasing those theta waves. And we can do that in a number of different ways. One that's gotten a lot of good research and is the use of neurofeedback. And that is a kind of computerized biofeedback program for the brain, which teaches children to lower the theta waves. My work has shown that certain nutritional supplements called OPCs can also lower the theta waves and improve attention. And these are in products, nutritional products like a grape seed and a pine bark. And also there are things that are found in blueberries and other kind of dark colored fruits and vegetables.
Okay. So now the idea of kind of lowering that theta brainwave, I mean, when people go into meditation, you know, I mean, a lot of times that people are trying to achieve that particular, you know, increase that particular wavelength, I guess, you know, to get that sense of peace, or, you know, that when you talk about daydreaming, you know, that kind of effect. So when you're working with children and you're moderating you're really not like dampening it completely, right? You're just moderating it so that it's not so prominent.
Yes. Well, the interesting part about kind of relaxation and mindfulness, which is a chapter in the book, is what we find in meditation, they're actually increasing the alpha brain waves.
Okay.
So not so much the theta. So it's the alpha.
Oh.
And so bringing down the theta, they're kind of able to focus better. And one of the interesting chapters in the book, which is kind of not intuitive to a lot of parents, is actually mindfulness programs and teaching kids about mindfulness and focusing in the present. And for some kids, meditations can actually also improve the symptoms of ADHD.
Okay. That's interesting. I actually have a woman scheduled from the UK who has a book on Meditations for Children that I just went through. And actually, she has two children that have the symptoms of ADHD. So I'm thinking that that was just observant parenting on her part to be able to put the two together.
Yes, yeah. We have lots of good research now, and it's not intuitive because you think of a hyperactive, impulsive child not being able to sit or be in the present for mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
But it can be very helpful, and oftentimes we do things like walking meditations and walking mindfulness so the kids can still be moving, which is sometimes more relaxing for them, but also teaching them mindfulness techniques, which can help the symptoms of ADHD.
Okay, great. Well, I'm going to make sure I let her know when she's on the show in a couple of weeks that to kind of pick up your book and read that.
Great.
So one area that is sometimes difficult for children with ADHD is the emotions of anger, irritability, and that kind of thing. So with your particular treatment plan, how does it address that particular emotional component?
That's a very common complaint, and we look at it in a couple different ways. A magnesium deficiency is common in some of those irritable. Also, a trace mineral called lithium. And it's an important part of the book because most people think of lithium as a medication that's prescribed for bipolar illness, but it's actually an essential mineral for the brain that's found in our soil and our foods. And what we have found is those children with family histories of anger problems or substance abuse problems tend to have deficiencies of lithium. And we can detect that in hair samples. And if the lithium is very low or undetectable, and there are those symptoms of irritability and anger, we give them this vitamin, this mineral that you can get at the health food store of nutritional lithium. And we've seen incredible success with nutritional lithium.
Wow, okay. I had no idea that that was... that there was a nutritional lithium. I mean, you only hear about the use of lithium with, I believe, wasn't it with schizophrenic that they used lithium?
Yeah, major mental illness, bipolar illness. Yeah,
crazy. Okay, well, we're about halfway through the show, Dr. Greenblatt, but I want to take a quick break. I do want to invite listeners that if you would like to call in and ask any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And for those of you listening live in the chat room, feel free to type in any questions, and then we'll get to those right after the break. So everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope that you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link to the approximately 1,000 shows that we have had over the past 5 years. Our show is available as a free podcast in the iTunes Store. You can subscribe there, or even quicker, there is a link to our show on iTunes on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, etc., and we have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. And finally, also on the site is a link to the great products we provide. Books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store with essential oils and personal and spa products. There is so much for you to explore and enjoy on our website, www.biteradio.me. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us again today. My very special guest is Dr. James Greenblatt, and he is co-author of the book, Finally Focused, The Breakthrough Natural Treatment Plan for ADHD that restores attention, minimizes hyperactivity, and helps eliminate drug side effects. Again, you can find out more about Dr. Greenblatt by visiting his website, which is jamesgreenblattmd.com. And again, you can find out more about the book specifically by visiting the website finallyfocusedbook.com. And again, I do have direct links to both websites in the show page description. Okay, so with that, we're back, Dr. Greenblatt. One of the things that I've been hearing a lot about, the benefits of, is something called probiotics. You'll see it advertised on TV, and I've just heard a lot of people talking about the benefits of them. So, but quite honestly, I don't know what they are, and do they have a role in helping children who have ADHD?
Well, I think if we go by the commercials, it's a little exaggerated, and they now have probiotics for every problem on the planet. And again, like anything that's helpful, some marketing takes it a little too far. So probiotics are really important. We have more gut bacteria in our GI tract than we have cells in our body. So 4 to 5 pounds of bacteria in the gut. So it really has incredibly important roles for our body. And most cultures, over the last hundreds of years, they've always had, fermented foods that provided the bacteria for our gut. And in our country, we have very few fermented foods. Would be things like, sauerkraut and kimchi and miso and some yogurts as well. So it's important. I wouldn't say every child would benefit from probiotics, but many of these kids do have overgrowth of yeast or overgrowth of certain bacteria, and we can test for that. And then for those individuals giving high-dose probiotics, we've seen ADHD symptoms completely disappear. But out of 10 children or adults with ADHD, it might be one or two. It wouldn't be all. Probiotics, would not hurt, but they might not be the answer to treating your child's ADHD unless you work with a professional who can help you.
Yeah. So now when you have someone come to you to, get an examination and come up with a treatment plan, how does that work? Because it sounds like that, there are many different things that you have to test for, and that each person is so unique that, a one size fits all or even a couple sizes really isn't effective.
Yes, I think the evaluation is really important, meaning a clinical interview, family history, and understanding the child's symptoms. Most of the way we've written the book, Finally Focused, is something that parents would be able to kind of follow and do on their own. In my practice, the work that we do is actually looking really closely at testing to kind of evaluate if there are certain deficiencies and proceed with a very kind of what we call personalized treatment plan based on any deficiencies or abnormalities that we would find. But there's so many things in the book that parents would be able to kind of do on their own, like we discussed the magnesiums and the OPCs and other kind of herbal or nutritional supplements that can be helpful.
Yeah. Okay. Because that was the one thing that, as I was going through and reading, the book, you know, it was obvious that there were certain things that can be done, you know, just by reading the book and kind of applying it. But it just seemed it was real important that, you know, that if let's say if you don't have a magnesium deficiency, then providing extra magnesium would create an imbalance in the opposite direction.
Yes, and that's why, you know, we really make steps very clear in the book. There's nothing recommended like magnesium that would be harmful and would set up imbalance. Many of these nutrients are what we call, you know, water-soluble, so they are not going to kind of accumulate in the body and cause any problems. So the book was written for the parent to be able to kind of understand what they can do at home. And we have special courses for physicians and how to train physicians in some of the more detailed work.
Yeah, okay. One of the areas that you also indicate in the book as far as being beneficial for those with ADHD is being in nature. You know, and that is one of my favorite things. I mean, that to me, that's... you know, put me out in nature and I'm a happy camper, so to speak. But for children with ADHD, how is it the silence, the stillness, is that what kind of helps with that? Or what, in your opinion, why do you think that is such a benefit? Why does it help people with ADHD?
Well, I think one of the things that, you know, we found, and people have referred to it as vitamin N for nature, is
okay.
that it's not just a sense of kind of peace or relaxation, but children, and there were studies from kids from the inner city and various groups of individuals in nature that everything changes, the neurochemistry, the brain waves. So there is a focus... more focused attention out in nature, and this has been documented again with good research. So it's intuitive. Many people feel better and like being out in nature, but we also have good brain research showing that kids with ADHD pay attention and focus better after spending time in nature.
Yeah. Okay. To me, that's, you know, I love that idea. I think that's something that, I mean, it's free, you know, and it's as far as, you know, natural medication, that's wonderful. With the, I want to talk a little bit about familial kinds of connections. Is there a tendency, maybe because of the genetic side, where maybe multiple children in a particular family may experience symptoms of ADHD? Is there any kind of familial connection or significance to an occurrence?
Yeah, I think it's very important that parents understand it's oftentimes genetic. So we often find one parent who's struggled with similar symptoms and oftentimes could be you know, more than one sibling, depending on that genetics. But it's also, having ADHD is not necessarily a disability, and I think it's important to understand that ADHD symptoms sometimes have been strengths. These are kids and adults who tend to be creative and passionate and energetic, often the people you want on your team or on your job. So it's really kind of understanding these symptoms and supporting these kids in environments that they might not do as well with, and certainly encourage them to find environments where they excel in. So some of our major, you know, founders of companies and leaders in the in our country and around the world have been people that talked about symptoms of ADHD.
Yeah. I had a gentleman from the UK who wrote his memoir and his recognition of having symptoms of ADHD, not recognizing them until adulthood. And he used the term that he called it a disability, a different ability. And, you know, that to him, I mean, it was, you know, he experienced those positive aspects. And, you know, because of that, he sometimes felt reluctant to try and modify, you know, modify the symptoms. So, I mean, I don't know, you know, and in one sense, like you say, there are some very positive attributes, through that. And I believe that you can really learn a lot from those with different abilities than we have. So, do I or don't I? Do I modify? And I had one woman who really had difficulty with doing the medication route, you know, and she didn't do the natural route with some of the things that you're talking about, but she really had difficulty with the conventional medicine and side effects, and just eventually just tried using different types of life skill coping mechanisms. So I guess it's one of those that you kind of have to, be aware of and maybe take a personal approach. I mean, uniquely personal approach.
Yeah, I do think that's the most effective treatment, because some individuals with symptoms of ADHD or diagnosis don't need to be treated, and others are finding that it's impairing some aspect of their life. I think the adult statistics are really staggering. Untreated ADHD, in terms of under the research, would be a list of things like higher rates of divorce, poor job satisfaction, money problems, crimes, traffic accidents keep coming up. So it's really important that if some aspect of your life is impaired, whether it's just your relationship with your spouse or not working up to your potential at the job, that you seek treatment. And there are nutritional, natural alternatives as well as medication alternatives. But if you just kind of find it hard to pay attention in this environment, but you've adapted your life so you can focus in another environment, then you don't necessarily need treatment for some of the symptoms.
Yeah. So, it does seem that the key element is if it impairs your life, your life experience in some way.
Exactly. Yes, I think that's a good way of putting it.
Okay. Another question. What about, you know, we talked about familial. What about gender? How does male, female fit, you know, I mean, statistically speaking, more male than female, different types of issues with gender?
I think the gender issue is really important and kind of only recently been looked at more carefully. There's much more men, so the higher ratio of boys, actually, to girls in young children. It gets a little less as they get older, but what's more fascinating to me is that there's a higher rate of prescription medication for ADHD women than adult males. So I think the women have more prescriptions written, but there are higher rates for both boys and men for the statistic. The other issue with gender that I think needs to get looked at is some of the young girls are not as hyperactive. So they often get missed. Our height of boys are easy to identify. They might be running and swinging and bouncing. And we pick them up early at school, versus an ADHD girl might not be hyperactive, but they might just be inattentive and impulsive, and they're not picked up. And what we found is, and the research has demonstrated this, a higher incidence of eating disorders and even obesity in some of our ADHD girls and young adolescents.
Huh. Okay. Well, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I could see those, those gender-specific, types of symptoms. But that would be important for teachers and educators to be able to be, informed of those differences so that they can, pick up on the cues.
Yes, that's one of the kind of newer information that we have there, that not everyone with ADD is hyperactive, and we need to kind of explore and ask better questions to make our assessments for particularly young girls or adolescents with ADHD.
Yeah. Now, we talked a little bit about nutrition, and so a question is, I know a lot of children who just seem to have a hypersensitivity to certain foods. Do the nutritional imbalances, do they kind of sometimes are they is shown through hypersensitivity to certain foods or allergic reactions? Is it manifested, in the way of hypersensitivity or allergies?
Yes, in the 1980s, I remember I observed when I was in college an allergist who was treating patients from all over the world, and he was looking at food allergies and how it affected behavior. So in my experience over my practice, I found particularly in young children under 10 that certain foods can trigger behavioral problems. Now, it's not the same allergies, the peanut allergies and what we call the immediate hypersensitivity where someone gets an anaphylactic dangerous reaction. They're called delayed hypersensitivity reactions, and they can go between 1 and 2 days. They're not as dramatic. But one, we can test for it, or parents can just do elimination diets to determine which foods these children might be sensitive to. But for young kids, I think it's really important to address food allergies for symptoms of ADHD.
Yeah. Now, by the way, I do want to let people know that you have a great blog on your website, and they really would be able to learn a lot by going through and looking at the entries that you made. The one in particular that really stood out for me was the one on lead, and the idea when the whole Flint, Michigan and the lead in the water pipes, kind of thing. There is a connection to lead and maybe an increase in ADHD, and is that something particularly in those in that area should really be hypervigilant about?
Yes, the research with lead and ADHD has been many, many years, dramatic and direct correlation with lead levels and increased incidence of ADHD. I think the Flint, Michigan kind of brought this crisis, back, even though we've been talking about it for many, many years. And in my state, Massachusetts, after Flint, Michigan, they went checked for lead in many school systems around the state, and they found high lead levels in the drinking fountain and the cafeteria water. And so it's really important that we kind of understand that. And what also is related, because it's in these old pipes, is high copper. So we devote a chapter in the book also in copper. And elevated copper, which is also in our water supply, in our environment, is very commonly associated with ADHD.
Wow. Okay. I had no idea about the copper. Wow. That's something that we really need to look at, our plumbing, structures. So now, is thinking back on your years of casework, is there any particular cases that really stand out in your mind as far as you know, the effectiveness of the plus-minus treatment plan, and obviously, you know, names not required, you know, but I mean, any what were some of the ones that really kind of stick out in your mind as being, you know, particularly satisfying for you in being able to assist?
Well, I think, you know, over the years, there's hundreds of now probably thousands of cases, and the reason we wrote this book is because the work is so gratifying. Some of the ones that, you know, really stand out are these, you know, five-year-old boys that are kicked out of preschool. You know, these are private preschools. The parents are paying, and the behavior was so disruptive that they were kicked out. And then looking at doing a good history and looking at a few drops of this nutritional lithium, their aggression was able to be almost completely stopped, where they were able to get back into school. And again, untreated, this boy would have had just a horrible trajectory through the school system. But as we treat these kids younger ages, so number of boys like that with that very aggressive behavior that they all feel so bad afterwards. They're not doing it on purpose. They just can't control it.
Yeah.
You know, another case.
Was... Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Sorry. I was going to say, you know,
I was going to say
the kids obviously, you know, for them not to be able to control it has to be a very frustrating thing for a child. You know, I mean, you know, they can't rationalize, you know, exactly what's going on. Obviously, you know, they don't want the negative kinds of reactions and repercussions, you know, so it has to be not only, you know, frustrating, but I would think very confusing for a child.
Absolutely. They don't understand why they can't follow through, complete the work, why they get in trouble. Because, you know, when I speak to these kids individually and they can, you know, ask everyone the same question, if they can make a magic wish, what would they change? You know, they don't ask for the, you know, the pony or the $1 million, you know, most of these kids ask for things like being able to control their behavior better, not disappointing mom and dad. So they are kind of painfully aware victims and are just hoping that they can get relief.
Yeah. Yeah, that has to be very satisfying to be able to help them, you know, overcome that and you know, and this is one of the areas where I just think that there's been so much information, you know, put out there that, you know, I mean, as I was going through and reading your book, there were things that I just really heard for the first time. And then I've talked to many people, you know, who have children who have symptoms of ADHD or even, you know, adults who in hindsight recognize, you know, that has been an issue for them and, you know, have had to learn to cope and some, you know, to a greater success than others, you know. And so to me, it's especially for parents who maybe have the symptoms but don't recognize it, you know, it seems to be really important to be able to, for them to be able to recognize it, take some action, you know, and be able to, you know, to base not only live their life more fully, but also to be able to help their child who may exhibit the same kind of behavior.
Yeah, and it's very important. And I think the model that our medical community is kind of articulating really is just medication. There's only one solution. And I think that's where there's been a big disservice to parents and adults with ADHD.
Yeah. Now, I mentioned in the introduction that, you know, you have a lot of natural treatments for various symptoms, but also you indicate that there may be a time when some conventional medication is required. And so when you get to that point, that's required. Well, I know that in the introduction I mentioned something about you find ways to try and minimize side effects. So exactly when it gets to that point for you that you have to, issue or to use conventional medication, what are some of the ways that you help your patients, cope with the medication and also without feeling all of the crazy side effects that some of these have?
Well, I think, age is important. Again, for the young kids, we try to avoid the medicines until they need it. For the adults or the adolescents really struggling, after the nutritional evaluation, if medicines are needed, we can use those. But one, we can do genetic testing to help predict which medications might be better. And two, some of the nutritional work, particularly the magnesium, can decrease some of the common side effects. And what we mentioned, copper, one of the most common things we see in kids that have side effects, a lot of the kids I see are those that have failed medications. It's oftentimes due to high copper levels. And these are the kids that don't respond well to the stimulant medications. So we provide treatment to lower their copper, and then they usually can tolerate medications much better.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good enough. So we're down toward the end of the show. So is there any information that maybe we didn't cover that you feel is really important to get out there, maybe either just in general or information from the book?
Well, I think one thing we didn't cover, which might seem obvious for parents, is exercise, the benefit of exercise. Kids feel better. And the research is now quite clear that the attention and focus is better. And I think the most important thing I can share is that everyone is different, so a real personalized approach is critical, and that parents should not just rely on one treatment. Medications might be the answer for some kids, other kids, nutrition, and the term that we use is integrative medicine, integrative psychiatry, being able to use medicines and nutritional support to give these kids the most help we can.
Yeah, I would think that it would be important also to just to kind of keep track of the plan, because I would think that adjustments would be made, as the child grows older, certain adjustments may need to be made.
Sure, absolutely. Oftentimes, as they expand their diet, eat better, maybe less sugar, more exercise, academic changes, shift, that treatment can be shifted. Or maybe if someone needed medicine for a year, they don't need it the rest of their lives. So lots of room for kind of individualized care.
Perfect. Well, Dr. Greenblatt, thank you very much for your time. I've learned a lot, and I'm sure our listeners did as well. So thank you for sharing your time with us.
Thank you, Robert. I appreciate the opportunity.
It's my pleasure. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Dr. James Greenblatt, and we've been talking about the book that he co-authored, Finally Focused, The Breakthrough Natural Treatment Plan for ADHD that restores attention, minimizes hyperactivity, and helps eliminate drug side effects. Again, you can find out more about Dr. Greenblatt by visiting his website, which is www.jamesgreenblattmd.com. And again, you can find out more about the book at the website, finallyfocusedbook.com. And again, I do have direct links to both of those websites in the show page description. And definitely go to Dr. Greenblatt's website and check out his blog. Some very great articles there. So, everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me That's BITERADIO.ME. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.